This podcast was recorded at the 4th Chimag Live event, PR Unspun, on April 24th, 2007, in London. Featuring on the panel, Jackie White, Online Communications Director at Edelman, Neville Hobson, VP of New Marketing at Crayon, Stephanie Bonnet, Director and Digital Media Evangelist at Burson Marsteller, London, and Mark Rogers, CEO of Market Sentinel. The event was produced and chaired by Mike Butcher of tbytes.com, with podcast services provided by Perfect Path Consulting. The event was sponsored by Microsoft Windows Live. Keep in touch with Windows Live Messenger, Mail, and Spaces at www.get.live.com.
Thank you, Deirdre. My name is Mike Butcher. I'm a journalist and blogger. I'm the other Mike Butcher. The other Mike Butcher, apart from me, is a baseball star in Southern California. If you Google me, that's who I'm not. This week I am mostly blogging on tbytes.com, a blog about social media and Web 2. That's rather a hackneyed phrase now, isn't it? Web 2. Perhaps we should be calling it Web 14.7. Thank you very much for coming to this event this evening. This is a really great turnout and quite indicates just what a hot topic this is. PR Unspun. What on earth are we going to do? The lunatics are in control of the asylum now. And there's something, you know, all of these people here on our panel are attempting to deal with this, as well as many of you out there. And you're in the front line, I'm sure, many of you, on this battle of trying to handle the change, the seismic change going on in media business at the moment. I'll just introduce our panel so they don't have to kind of go into all that kind of PR pitch kind of mode. On my left, we have Mark Rogers, who is CEO of Market Sentinel. Mark co-founded Market Sentinel in 2004, and it monitors consumer-generated content in blogs, message boards, you name it. Next to him is Neville Hobson, VP of New Marketing of Crayon. He's a communicator, a blogger, a podcaster, a second life explorer, somewhat like Captain Scott, I dare say, and one of the leading early adopters and influencers in social media at the moment. Next to him is Jackie White, who is the online communications director with Edelman. Jackie's been leading Edelman's interactive solutions for 5 years. And she's overseen tons of stuff, including working with Diego, Unilever, the National AIDS Trust, you name it. Ask her later. And Jackie, actually, I would consider one of the veterans in this space. And last but not least, Stephanie Bonnet, who is the director of Burson Marsteller London. She is Burson Marsteller's a digital media champion for Europe. So just think of Rocky climbing the steps. And that's your image of Stephanie, the PR champion. So I'm going to throw to you, Mark, first of all. We're going to ask some go into a little bit of a discussion on the panel here and try and tease out some of these issues. And then we're going to bring you guys in, crowdstorm-like, to look around this issue. Mark, let me ask you, what on earth are we doing here and why are we talking about this subject? Is it really mainstream now, social media?
Yeah, I think you've answered the question in just saying how full the room is, really. I think it is mature now. Social media, I mean, it changes name from year to year. A year ago, everybody was talking about blogging, and now that's subtly become something slightly different, social media. But whatever it is, it's here. And the fact that this event sold out, I think the day the early bird booking closed was the day it sold out already, and they were turning people away, really tells its own story. It's been a long time coming, but I think now the decision last week by Unilever to switch its entire market research budget, I'm talking now as an online market researcher, the fact that they switched their entire £272 million budget online, they're not going to do any offline market research from now on at Unilever, and that tells its own story. You know, this is now a sector where essentially everyone is online, or enough of the population are online for you to get actionable insights from looking at these conversations that are going on in social media. And it's mainstream in terms of politics, it's mainstream in terms of consumer opinions, and it's stuff that anyone in communications, marketing, PR needs to be understanding and getting their feet wet in.
So, Jackie, over at Edelman, what's it like getting the phone call from a client who is slowly, the blood is, or perhaps if they're sitting in front of you, the blood is slowly draining from their face as they look at how their brand is being royally trashed online. What's that like? What do you do?
I let the blood slowly drain from my face and then pick up the phone. It's interesting that actually we're seeing a shift away from people that are coming to us at that point in time where things have gone horribly wrong and they need a band-aid fix on things. And a lot of the clients that we, as an agency, work with, the digital team has had to be quite strong about, you know, we won't come in and give you a band-aid fix because ultimately that's not going to help you in the online space. It's a, you know, it's a sprint, not a marathon, as many a blogger is want to say. No, backwards.
The other way around.
Marathon, not a sprint, you know what I mean. But
don't they want a band-aid? Don't they want you to take away the pain?
Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. And, you know, sometimes there are times when we can do that. But, I mean, ultimately, I think any kind of online campaign that you're going to do in this kind of space is it's either about one or two things. It's either about taking something positive and amplifying it and getting it out there to as many people as you can do. Or it's about, you know, the band-aid solution. It's about looking at all the negativity that, you know, might be going on around a particular topic or an issue and looking at what you can do to, you know, either balance that out or manage that down as quickly as you can.
Stephanie, at Bursa Mostello, I mean, you need a little more length on the microphone there. What are some of the things that you are doing in common with a lot of agencies? How on earth, what are you tracking? Do you sit a junior in the corner of the office and say, just get on Google and start Googling Coke, for heaven's sake? Or what do you do? I mean, what's the process?
No, actually, we took the approach that we didn't want to have some specialist people dealing with digital media, and we trained everybody in the organization, every client staff, in dealing with that and knowing what was the impact for the clients and how it changed the way communications are now done. And the way it changes the way as a PR professional they should do their job. So it's really something that is ingrained everywhere. And it's actually something we do also a lot for clients. I mean, the whole training education is the first thing that clients, especially in other markets in Europe, come to us for, because a lot of them have heard of it, but they don't really know what it entails for them, what they should pay attention to, should they be there or not. So it really starts with education and training, and that's why it's important that all of us as PR professionals know the impact, know how it's going to change the way we do communication so that we can guide our clients in that direction.
And how, and is it working?
Yes, it works with some of them, not all of them. Some of them.
Who doesn't it work with?
It works with some very controlled industries. Some that are, for instance, it doesn't work with pharmaceutical companies.
So like drugs,
yes.
Something like
that. Yeah, exactly. It's so tightly regulated that they have a lot of constraints to work with. So it's difficult for them to, you know, let go and accept this idea that you have to lose control, which is what it's all about. It works, of course, a lot with technology companies and, of course, brand consumers companies it works well with. And we're finding that actually B2B and industry companies, and that's a lot of the clients we work with, are really getting into that more in terms of knowing the kind of stakeholders' conversation about them and the kind of messages they should apply, both online and offline, to answer these issues.
I see. Neville, you blog a lot about this space. You're quite known for your blog, NevilleHobson.com. What are some of the sort of key issues you see in this space? I mean, one of the things that comes up now and again is something called blogger relations. Does it exist? Can you have PR relations with bloggers or with, you know, a MySpace community, for instance? What's your view?
That's a good question, Mike. By the way, is anyone Twittering? What's happening here? Anybody? No?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Okay, great. Stuart, thank you. Blogger relations, it's a new phrase. I think it's an element of public relations that's going to become increasingly important once we know what it is, and therein is part of the issue. Blogger relations, when I talk to people, they tend to mean media relations as applied to bloggers. Personally, I don't think it's quite like that, even though the elements are broadly similar, i.e. it's all to do with developing relationships. But those relationships and the development of them, I believe, are very different in reaching out to a blogger than reaching out to a mainstream media journalist. I think over time that will change. As we see a blurring between the division that social media and mainstream media, there are even some people who are calling for let's get rid of the word social and just call it all media. I don't think we're ready for that yet. So defining what is the activity that public relations needs to own, which is as part of the relationship building PR does on behalf of its clients in reaching out to people like journalists who are the, if you will, the traditional disseminators of your story. And reaching out to this new breed of reporter, in a sense, is a skill that is still developing. And I see so many different definitions of what is blogger relations. I've been doing it a little bit myself, what I call blogger relations, which is reaching out to bloggers. Am I doing it any differently than I would do it to developing a relationship with a journalist? Definitely. But that, again, how do I translate that into something that other people could use? That's part of the trick we all need to grasp still.
So back in the good old days, you took out the journalists for a right royal lunch, offered them drugs, women, alcohol, men even, boys. What else did we do? Or did they do? And does that work with bloggers?
Virtually, perhaps, in Second Life, but it's something that... The reality is that this is all online these days. And
in fact, that case, it's a horse then, right?
You got it. But it's all to do with, I think, the ways in which how you develop relationships is changing because of online, let's say. I've got experiences, I'm sure many of you do, where I've built relationships with people over quite a length of time, and yet we still haven't met. I know a lot about them, and I would trust them. I would actually do business with them. We'd actually exchange cash, even though we've never met. That's brand new. And I think that in the sense of that it's taking up, there's more relationships developing like that. We're going to see more of it. So all those things you mentioned, that's yesterday.
Jackie, you have a view on this?
Yeah, I do. I think actually there's a sliding scale of bloggers and talking about blogger relations as a job lot is almost quite misleading, because I think on one end of the scale you've got the almost what's a commercial media entity that's using the blog as the channel, and I guess this is things like a lot of the shiny blogs, which driven by advertising.
Hold it close to your face.
Driven by advertising, have journalists who are actually doing the blogging. Down to the end of the scale, through the middle of the scale, people like. Like Neville, and people that have a sense of professionalism about what they do, and they're blogging about their job so that they know that they have to keep their comments kosher. Down to, the other end of the scale is I've been working through an issue for about the last 3 months with a blogger who I would say is at maybe the bottom end of the professional scale, who took issue with one of our clients. So, posted quite a vitriolic post. Fine, that it's within their rights to do that, but as part of that, they also posted the home address of our client, which, most commercial media outlets, of any way, sense, or form, would realise that's completely a no-go zone. But these guys just, won't take this down, don't recognise that they've done the wrong thing in terms of, invading people's personal privacy. Sort of sliding scale, I think.
Right, quite a fascinating. And actually, I can just speak to that, which is quite a well-known blogger in the UK, plasticbaguk.org, Tom Coates, a couple of years ago had the comments spammed by Silit Bang, which was rather interesting because a lot of his posts were about how his biological father had recently contacted him and he was going through a lot of stuff. And Silit Bang turned up to talk about their product on his posts. Mark, the influence of blogs, social media, you're in the business a lot of the time of quantifying this kind of thing. What is the influence of, say, one blog with a lot of readers and, say, maybe a more professional sense of influence versus 300 GMTV viewers perhaps pissed off about calling the phone lines that were dead?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that question is that influence is topic specific as far as we're concerned, as far as measuring it mathematically. You can't be, you can be influential on a number of different things, but you're probably not influential on everything. And the problem with approaches that measure numbers of links and so on is that that doesn't take account of the context of the link. So one way of thinking about social media in terms of measuring it is that instead of thinking about it as these discrete communities like MySpace, Bebo, Pixo, and so on, you can see it as a series of virtual communities in which there are a number of communities who are all having conversations about different things. So let's say when you or I are linked by the fact that we're talking about the new Spider-Man 3 movie, we can construct you a network, a social network, derived from those conversations, conversations about Spider-Man 3, and you can identify within that community who is influential on the topic of Spider-Man 3, or even in more detail, you can say who is influential on the topic of special effects within Spider-Man 3. And that allows you, and you can do that about any issue you care to mention, nut allergy or illegal downloading are a couple of the topics we've been looking at recently on behalf of clients, largely blue chip customers. And what you can do then is the communicator is you can have a much more informed view. You know who you need to be listening to, because within the network, citation analysis, which is a mathematical approach to the way you measure networks, allows you to mathematically measure who is most authoritative within the network, who is most listened to, and that's not the same as having the most number of links. Sometimes it is, but not always. And then you can also tailor the messages that you might be giving out to be of most interest to the people who are most influential. So, for example, the client who was interested in the nut allergy measurement then took our analysis and essentially put out a message about nut allergy. And the result of that was so effective that it killed the story. 24 hours later, there was no conversation about this controversy that they were actively communicating about. And so if you get it right, instead of the whole thing being, some chaotic nightmare where everyone's chattering and you don't know who to talk to, you can actually just get your message out there, answer the question, set everybody's mind to rest, and, you know, the story's over, on to the next thing as far as everybody else is concerned.
So I can probably guess what your answer will be, but is it as simple, can this be done with really simple tools out there like Technorati? Can I blog nut allergy on technorati.com and come up with the answers and not have to buy your service? Let's be aware of what you do.
The short answer is, of course, I prefer you to buy our services. Of course, you know, commercial services like ours aren't suitable for everybody. And actually, Technorati, spam aside, gives you some clues. Spam is obviously a major problem depending on what you're searching for. And it will give you some idea about who's talking about your topic. It'll waste a lot of your time, essentially speaking. Normally, when we've completed an exercise, we say, okay, here are the four people you need to talk to. And it's often as many as that, three or four. It's no more. And they say, what about the others? And you go, honestly, talk to those three. The others will find out pretty damn quickly. And they'll pick it up. If your message is appropriate, they'll pick it up. If you go the Technorati route, obviously you can spray the target, but it'll take you a little bit longer and cost you a little bit more in terms of that resource.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just to add something on that, I've got some experience myself of going the Technorati route recently, and I tell you, it is actually quite tricky. I agree absolutely with what you said, Mark, in identifying the three or four. It's how do you do that is the key thing. Particularly, and this will happen to, I would say, many of you in this room, where you're needing to include social media as part of your overall outreach, as part of whatever it is you're doing for your client. And that will include identifying people in a niche of which you don't have any knowledge. And that was my experience recently. It was actually to do with extreme sports, snowboarding. And that was very interesting in identifying who the major influencers were who were blogging about this particular niche of extreme sports in a way that made me feel confident I could actually recommend them to the client. And then how do you find out the real influence level? And again, this is using tools like Technorati, like BlogPulse, like Google Blog Search, all the search tools for blogs, and being very, very careful with your keywords and how you do this, analyzing Technorati's linking, and understanding how the Technorati link structure actually does work, because the numbers tend to differ depending on when you look. So you can do it, And you're probably right. In fact, you are right, Mark, that for most people, for that kind of thing, that's probably sufficient. But for the depth analysis, you actually do need to go deeper than what those free tools offer,
so,
I think.
Stephanie, then there's a nightmare scenario here, isn't there, that you've done your research, you perhaps contracted an outside agency like Mark's, and you've come down, you've tried to find the influential blogger, that key sort of lodestone in the conversation online, and it all goes wrong. You've got the wrong person. What do you do then?
Before I answer that one, I just wanted to add something about Technority. For those of you who work for global clients, be aware that Technority is obviously very skewed towards English-speaking blogs. And if you want, for instance, to know what's being said in South Korea or France, these are countries that are notoriously not covered by Technority. So you always have to keep that in mind. And that's where specialized services actually can help you having a much more localized approach and monitoring. And then you say, sorry, it all goes wrong with the blogger.
What happens if you've identified the wrong influences?
Oops.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Hopefully you've done your homework well and you have influence, you have found the right one. You have to look at it as a kind of holistic strategy, and you don't only look at, you know, specific bloggers, but you also try to build other platforms of discussions that can be picked up by other bloggers that maybe you wouldn't have identified. So you optimize your website, for instance, you optimize your search engine strategy, you do something with social networks and so on, and it's by multiplying the points of conversation and the touch points that you're going to be able to get your message out there and not only rely on a few bloggers that indeed may at some point be actually turning against you.
And is it actually cheaper to use social media to get a message out than using the traditional media? You were talking earlier about something that happened in Yahoo. With Yahoo in the US.
Yeah, an example, actually. It's true that a key question that we have is the return on investment. So much data, so many different tools, people don't really know where to start and exactly are they really going to get money out of their investment. There is one case study which is from Sprite the drinks, if I didn't pronounce it correctly. In the US, they were trying to get back their young audiences, and they knew that their young audiences were very much into basketball. So they developed a game, which is called the Dunk Ball Face Game, something like that, where people could go to their website and put their photo on a basketball game and then do some kind of videos where they would play with the ball with their face on and so on. And they were able to post it on YouTube, on Flickr, etc. They actually talked about that game on MySpace, and they also posted on Xanga, which is an online gaming platform, sharing gaming platform. What they found out is that they actually had from the social media, they had as much click-through to their website that if they had sponsored the whole portal page of Yahoo, the first homepage of Yahoo, which cost $250,000 a day if you want to sponsor it completely. This game cost them only $25,000. So over the course of 10 days, they got 10 times more people for 10 times less than the price than if they had actually sponsored Yahoo. So indeed, yeah, with social media, they got much more money for their books.
That sounds like quite convincing to me. We're going to, fairly shortly, we're going to throw this out to you guys so you can start talking and asking the panel questions. But we're going to be doing some more questions in the meantime. So start thinking about those questions to pitch, rather to put to the panel, not pitch. I forgot you. That was at lunchtime, wasn't it? And also a surprise audience interactive session, which is remain mysterious for the moment. So, Jackie, what are the actual granular effects of all this stuff on an agency? I mean, is everybody starting to have to, on the side of their desk, check what's going on, what the conversations are online about their particular account? I mean, what's the impact on an agency of trying to deal with social media and grapple with it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because it has changed, I think, for us phenomenally probably over the last 2 years. And I've been doing the job that I've been doing for about 5 years now. And for the first 3 years of that, I was like the geeky person that they wheeled in one in every 20 meetings, and I said my bit and then was kindly escorted to the door. And now I have a line of people, you know, up to my desk just saying, look, what's going on with this? What's going on with this? So it's impacted kind of the specialist in this kind of space, but it's also right across the business. I think there's a lot going on. So, you know, we've all got our RSS feeds, so we've all got our new ways of consuming news, but and we've all had to go through the ethics training and the understanding of what it's all about. But I think fundamentally what's starting to change, and ideally we're working towards the same model that Stephanie was talking about, is not necessarily having digital specialists who sit in an ivory tower, but having the whole agency understand, you know, the implications of social media for their business. But it's almost like it's intensified the time that's involved from an agency perspective without necessarily a huge incremental, you know, raise in budget. So whereas, you know, don't want to draw a line in the sand because clearly, you know, offline media still has a huge impact. But, you know, in old media terms, you can go out and you can place a story on the front page of the Sun and you can reach 3 million people to kind of plant the seeds that will, you know, get the depth. I'm digging myself a hole here, which I know I can hear Neville sighing about, but to plant the seeds that will get the depth of influence that might be, you know, less people, but, you know, deeper influence. It just takes more time, I think, and it takes, you know, it's the ultimate in fragmented media. So whereas before you had to understand what, you know, 20 different media outlets were like in on a given specialist subject, now you probably need to just be reading and understanding and thinking about probably 100 different online sources of information around that same topic.
So I'm going to mug you now, Jackie, and I'm really sorry about this, and I did give you fair warning that Edelman... Let me just say two words. Edelman and Walmart.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What went wrong? Just walk us through that.
Nothing really. No. I can give you, I'm in a room full of PR people, so I can give you the PR spin on it, and then I'll tell you the real story. But, I mean...
That sounds incredibly appropriate, actually. It's on iTunes.
Yeah. I think fundamentally we are an agency, you know, we right from the top, for anyone, you know, who knows anything about our agency, right from the top and through every level of management, our agency really fundamentally has hedged all its bets on the fact that this is a big way forward for the PR industry and social media, and the whole changes that are coming in the online space are really fundamentally changing what we do. And so we have invested a lot of money, we've hired some amazing people in, and we're going out there and we're just kind of working out what it's all about, and we're pushing the boundaries, and, you know, every now and again we come up against a boundary and it's like, ooh, yep, we fucked up there, so right, you know, where do we go from here, what do we do? And we learn from those lessons, and you know, the implications of the Walmart thing, which I'll come back to in a sec, you know, every single person across the whole global Edelman network then had to go through this, through an ethics training process. So we had to understand the implications of everything that we were doing in the blogosphere, in social media. You know, we now have really strong and, I think, really good guidelines in place about what we can and can't do. So that's PR spin. And
whoever's
broadcasting can switch off the tape now. but I think the real story, Oh, I'm nervous about that. I think what it boils down to...
Just go for it. Come on.
Yeah. It's been nice knowing you in this job, and I'll see how I'll be looking tomorrow. What it boils down to...
The longest resignation note in history.
It's just a little bit of laziness, and it's happened on, you know, every front, but it's probably slightly less visible. So rather than, you know, going out there and finding the real people that would be up for the adventure that was, you know, Walmarting across America, and was a great campaign and was getting great feedback.
Yeah, okay, but for the benefit of everybody...
I'm getting there. but fundamentally, like, rather, you know, my personal take on it, and, you know, not the views and thoughts of Daniel J. Edelman Limited, are that it just came down to a bit of laziness. So rather than, you know, us going out there and finding the people and, you know, finding crazy people that would be up for these adventures, we just kind of picked people that were in easy reach and, you know, weren't completely transparent about how close the links with these average consumer type people were. How's that?
Okay. Well, I think you'll have to ask Jackie afterwards. We'll apply her with alcohol later on. I apologise in advance. I'm sorry. I knew I did give you fair warning with that. But go and Google it, frankly, basically says. Great story. we're going to go into some questions now with the audience in a minute. Let me just throw something out just to the panel generally. Let's sort of get into this a bit deeper. Come on. What about, for instance, is being... You're trying to sort of do a social media campaign. You're trying to seed things amongst bloggers or particularly prominent MySpace members or Facebook, you name it. What happens if... Is it possible to actually make the outing of the PR strategy part of the strategy? In other words, everyone turns around and goes, oh, it's Coke, or oh, it's Ford. And actually that, you know, you want people to do that.
Let me take a stab at that one. It's all to do with transparency. In fact, you wouldn't do it like that at all. It's not about seeding. It's not about any of that stuff. If that's traditional thinking, that does not work in social media at all. I believe that very clearly. This is about relationship building. It's about being part of the community. So building a relationship with a blogger, for example, isn't just, you know, exchanging some emails and maybe talking via Skype or something. It's actually subscribing to that blogger's RSS feed over time, getting to know what he or she writes about. In MySpace, it's being part of that community. It's listening to podcasts. It's being in Second Life. It's actually being there. If you're not immersed in social media, you haven't got a hope in hell of understanding how to use social media. So you need to be in the space, absolutely immersed in it, which doesn't translate into, you know, years and so forth, but being in there so that you get a sense of how things work around here. And one thing is dead sure, too, that the one other difference with this is that if you do go in fact, Mike, that example you gave of Tom Coates and Cillit Bang was a classically brilliant example, because Cillit Bang were outed, and it was massive, the public outcry at the underhand way they went about it. In the case of Edelman and Walmart, that was very different, actually. It wasn't quite like that. In your defense, they were very transparent with, yes, we screwed up, and here's how we're fixing it. Very transparent indeed, and earned a lot of credibility as a result of that. So it is all about transparency, being part of the community, immersing it, and doing it yourself.
Stephanie.
I would say that if your client is actually not ready to be transparent, it's probably not the right time for him to start going into social media. They have to do some changes internally, not talking about actually some, also on the operational front, some things they have to check. For instance, do they have a good customer service? Because the minute they go out there in social space, they're going to be attacked first and foremost on the customer service. But if they're not ready for that, and if they don't hear this cry for transparency from the people, which, by the way, if you think of it, I always think that it's a bit similar to the whole trend for CSR that we had a few years ago, where we're asking companies to show their commitment to be transparent about their impact on the environment. That's a fundamental change which is happening, and companies at some point will have to accept that. They will have to accept that they have to be more transparent. If right now they're not ready, then, you know, maybe they start with a little something that is not risky, or they just don't go there, but they have to start by asking themselves a question. Are we ready to go there? Are we ready to be transparent? Are we ready to lose control? And that's really the premise.
So, Mark, are we looking actually at the end of spin, that companies are actually going to have to start... Oh, dear. Did I say that word? Sorry. Sorry, I just must cross myself quickly. Is it the end of spin that the companies are actually going to have to live in change?
Yes, I think the things that are effective, of course, are honesty. It's a sort of, you know, an undervalued currency. But clearly the people who do well are the people who are honest and who put their hand up, as Neville was saying, and Stephanie just implied. Some work we've just been doing, looking at the Dell, and Dell are a sort of byword for how not to do this. Dell have been educated by pain. And they're actually now rather good at it. And what's interesting about them is actually they haven't solved all of the problems that gave rise to the Dell issue. And our research shows that people are still complaining, in fact, even in slightly greater numbers, about offshoring of customer service and some of the issues that got Dell into trouble in the first place. However, and it's a big however for people who feel they can't do it because they're worried, as far as Dell's concerned, one of the things that's brought them really good coverage in terms of commentary has been the sense amongst people who are commenting in blogs is that they're doing something about it. They're trying to reach out. And that alone has given them a bit of credit. So, okay, you're a bit annoyed that you spent half an hour on the phone to that guy who didn't quite understand what you were talking about and didn't have a very good script somewhere in India, but actually Dell are doing this site, and I don't know who saw this, but Ideastorm, which is their attempt to get people feeding back about technical issues, has just had the most extraordinary triumph, because someone posted a post a couple of weeks ago saying, don't kill off XP, don't kill off Vista, we're not ready for it as domestic consumers. We'd like to still buy or have the option of buying computers with XP on it. This was there's a thumbs up type mechanism, like with Dig, you know, where you endorse a post. When I last checked, it had been endorsed 12,500 times. And 2 days ago, just before the weekend, Dell announced that they were risking Microsoft's disapproval by again beginning to ship to consumers again with XP. Now, I don't know how long that process would have taken if they'd gone through another way of getting customer feedback in, but I'm sure it would have been much more tortuous, and frankly the argument would probably have been longer and bitterer with Microsoft. I think the people at Microsoft would probably look at that and go, fair enough, there's a big groundswell of opinion here which you're not catering for, you better ship with XP again, guys. And there's a classic solution of somebody who was in the doghouse, who by reaching out to the online consumer has taken some risks, but actually done something that's delivered real benefit to the customer, and they're going to win from doing that. You know, there are obviously more sales in them, more ROI.
Chinmag Live PR and Spun was sponsored by Microsoft Windows Live. Keep in touch with Windows Live Messenger, Mail and Spaces at www.get.live.com.